For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
The day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. It's the summer of sketchy lettuce, but it's also the summer of measles as cases skyrocket across the U.S. Let's get the latest from WWJ in Detroit.
It used to be that measles was really something that we would see what we call sporadically, meaning that it didn't show up very often, and when it did show up, it went away quickly. But that is not what we're seeing in 2026. So in 2026, thus far, as of about 2 or 3 days ago, we have had a total of 2,321 cases of measles that have been confirmed in the United States. And unusually, most of those cases are tied to domestic outbreaks, meaning someone got measles from somebody else in the United States. Whereas previously, we would see it that most people who had measles in the United States had acquired their measles abroad. And this is very, very unusual.
And is there something that's helping drive this domestic spread versus catching it in while traveling internationally?
Yeah, so this has really been driven by drops in vaccination. The number one way to prevent measles is to be vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, or as we sometimes use now, the MMRV vaccine. And what we are seeing is a drop in vaccine uptake, particularly on-time vaccine uptake. And so when population-level vaccination rates fall, more people get measles, and it increases the number of people to whom measles can spread.
And what are there certain states that we are seeing more cases of measles in versus others?
The states that have been hardest hit are South Carolina and Utah, although, you know, Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Virginia have also been quite heavily impacted by measles. And Michigan falls, you know, somewhere just below those hardest hit states with between, you know, 10 and 50 measles cases. I can pull up the exact number of measles cases we've had.
Are these numbers something that is concerning infectious disease specialists?
Absolutely. Measles is one of the most infectious diseases that we have. And when I say that, I mean that if you have someone who has influenza, classical flu, and they're, you know, in a completely susceptible population, they'll give flu to about two people. So they have what's called an epidemiology, the study of how diseases spread, an R naught of two. In a completely susceptible population, someone with measles will give measles to about 19 people. That is potential for just explosive growth. And by susceptible people, we mean people who either didn't have measles as children, which is everybody in the United States born before 1954, we presume immunity, or who weren't vaccinated. And what I will say is that the data for people who have had measles, certainly in Michigan, is that 100% of them, all 14 of them, we're not vaccinated against measles.
I know that you can't get the MMR vaccine until you're 6 months old. Is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
For those families who maybe have children who are too young to get the measles vaccine, is there a way for them to safely travel right now?
I don't think that we're seeing people change travel plans based on this at this point. And I would say this is a dynamic situation, but right now, no, I wouldn't change travel plans based on this. What I would do, though, is ensure that everybody who you're traveling with and everybody that you're seeing, if you are a parent of someone younger than 6 months old, that they are immune to measles. Because the way that we protect people who can't be vaccinated, either because they're too young or, like many people, they have some sort of immunosuppression, right? They may have had a bone marrow transplant. They may have an autoimmune disease that need to be on severe immunosuppression for one of many reasons. As we vaccinate everybody around them, part of the reason that everybody getting vaccinated is so important is certainly for our own health. The individual risk benefit to any vaccine that makes it to market in the United States is firmly in favor of vaccination. And the MMR and MMRV are some of our best studied, most known, clearest benefit and most effective vaccines that we have. But we also do it to protect, you know, babies and people who can't be vaccinated for a host of reasons. And so, you know, I'm the mother of very young children, and I rely on everybody else. Everybody in my family is vaccinated, and everybody that we see is vaccinated. But when I take my kids out, I rely on our community to also be vaccinated.
So that's a literal virus, but digital viruses are getting more and more sophisticated and just as invasive. Here's Tommy Tucker in New Orleans.
Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. I tell you what, they got people just staying up and literally staying up at night thinking of different ways, right?
It is. And, you know, a lot of it is just, you know, scams that have been around for 1,000 years, but now they're being wrapped in kind of new technology and new methods of doing it. But a lot of the methods and techniques remain the same. And at the end of the day, it's really just about separating you from your money.
That is interesting when you say that, because it really is scams that have been around for years and years and years and years. But just like in marketing, when it comes to product differentiation, where you have to update it for this, for that, the other thing, to make people want something new. Tell me about malvertising. What is that?
So malvertising has been around for a while. And, you know, like everything in information security and hacking has to have kind of a branded name, right? So malvertising is really just, you know, malicious advertising. Mm-hmm. And what it is it's when malicious code or, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of viruses are hidden in legitimate ads. And one of the things is when you visit a website, you know, a lot of times the ad networks are completely separate from that website, right? So you might go to a legitimate news website or you know, really anything, and they have a third party that's serving up those ads, and people buy those ads. And a lot of times malicious actors are able to kind of slip their ads into that network. Mm-hmm. So you go to a reputable site, you know, one you trust, it's been around forever, and it's a third party, you know, filling in those ads, and you can end up with something malicious. This has happened a number of times with legitimate newspaper websites and commerce websites and so on and so forth. So it's really tough because they're showing up in places that you trust already.
So how do I know if I'm looking at one of these things?
That's the challenge, right? Because, it's showing up on a legitimate site. It looks like a regular ad. It's really hard to differentiate it from a real ad. So it's almost impossible to tell, unfortunately. You know, but there are some ways to protect yourself. You know, always, you know, keep your browser updated and your system updated. You'll get a lot of recommendations around using an ad blocker, which will block all ads on web pages. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit controversial, right? Because the challenge is that's really, you know, why we're able to get all this free news and free content and things like that, because they're ads. And if everybody used an ad blocker, you know, we'd all have to just subscribe to get anything. So, but that can certainly be effective. You know, making sure that you have your antivirus and anti-malware software. You know, don't click on ads that, you know, seem too good to be true. The challenge is, again, it's really tough to tell, because a lot of times they'll kind of disguise themselves as legitimate retailers or retailers you're familiar with. But, you know, kind of something that seems too good to be true. But really, it's really tough to identify.
Primarily, they're trying to get my information from me, right?
Generally, although I think, you know, over time we're seeing, you know, fewer attempts to kind of get your information and then go out and open up a bank account or take out a mortgage, and more just trying to directly steal your money.
That's Electronics News, and here's more from KCBS in the Bay Area.
Move over, Waymo. Amazon's driverless Zoox robo-taxis has gotten the go-ahead to launch its vehicles in the U.S. over the next 2 years. Bloomberg's Amy Stillman. So, you know, Zoox already operates in Las Vegas and here in San Francisco. Where else are they testing, and are those the cities that may be the first to officially get them on the roads?
We're not exactly sure where this new, you know, fleet of commercial vehicles will be able to operate. But what I can tell you is that what they're receiving is a temporary exemption for up to 5,000 robo-taxis to operate commercially. So we can probably safely assume that these taxis are also going to be on the streets of San Francisco and Las Vegas.
Do we know how soon they're going to be taking passengers on a commercial basis?
We don't, is the short answer. Usually this is a process where they would first have to receive the exemption, and then, you know, there's a procedure. What we know is that the regulator has given them this temporary exemption for up to 2 years, so 2,500 vehicles annually over the next 2 years. Waymo, you know, has, you know, thousands of taxis operating in the United States, robo-taxis. These are taxis without human drivers. You know, they are by far and away the biggest. And Zoox at the moment has a fleet of 105 vehicles, which, as we just discussed, are on the roads for research and demonstration purposes. And this is an important point here, you know, the difference if we're looking at Waymo versus Zoox. One of the reasons why Waymo has been allowed to operate in the United States and has been able to build up its presence here is because it meets current federal motor vehicle safety standards, which require that these vehicles have steering wheels and brake pedals. What sets Zoox apart is that its vehicles do not have those, you know, those manual control operating systems. And the reason for that is because they were never designed with a, you know, a human driver in mind.
Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Odyssey's On Deadline. Subscribe to the daily podcast on your favorite platform.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.